Just trying to get back to where we left off on Tuesday. So we're talking about path variables, and these are useful. Let me get back. We don't bother them. These path variables are useful when we know this path ahead of time. They'll be useful in some other situations. For example, we talked about kind of navigating. It's kind of often used these intrinsic coordinates or path variables. I know my speed along my path that I'm going. Okay. And we wrote up some equations. We saw that the position of particle P with respect to the origin there, point O, we say, well, that's just some function of that path. That's a vector. And we know S is some kind of function of time. Right, so we know how we're moving along this path as a function of time, which means that this position, obviously, is a function of time as well. Okay. We wrote the velocity of that. We wrote it something like this. That's what we do. And we wrote the acceleration of that particle as well. Make sure it matched what we did. And we got to there, more or less. S dot squared there. Okay. So let's think about this. What we're going to try to do is define some unit vectors that appropriately describe this kind of configuration, these intrinsic coordinates, and allow us a convention to use there. Well, let's look first at, we said on Tuesday that this dr ds term and this d squared, the second derivative of that guy, are kind of properties of that path. So let's try to use those to maybe pull out some unit vectors we can use to describe this coordinate system, these path variables. Okay. If I have a curve, let's think about this first term, right? And let's like just look at a planar case, for example, and I have some curve there. And I take the derivative of that curve at any point. What does that tell me about that curve? Slope of that point, right? So if I take the derivative, let's do it there maybe. I take the derivative of that point and evaluate it at that point, I get the slope of the line of that curve. Right? What do we know about that slope relative to the curve? It's going to be tangent to it always. All right. The same is going to be true for us in three dimensions. Right. If we take the derivative of this with respect to S in three space, we know that that resulting vector comes out of that is tangent to that path, tangent to that curve. Right. So we're going to call that a tangential unit vector. So we're going to say, hey, well, ET, let's call it the unit vector ET, just that. Okay. So we can write that. Okay. Does that make sense physically for us to describe? Is the velocity of this guy always tangent to the path? Yes? No? Physically, think about it. I'm running along a path. It's my velocity in that direction always. Running along a path. I want to vote for no. We have votes for yes. Anybody?
Velocity is your acceleration. It's usually not, especially at the ends.
Sure. Acceleration. We see we have probably two different directions there. So yeah, even if the velocity is in the path, the acceleration is probably not going to be. based on this, because we know the second derivative will be perpendicular to the first, always. So these path variables, my velocity is always tangent to the path, right? So this makes sense physically. Right? I have this S, remember, describes the distance along this path. So if I have some forward velocity along my path, it's always tangent to the path at that instant. Okay. Well, if you look at this second term, right, d squared rs, second derivative, well, that's just d, right? Derivative with respect to S of that tangential vector. Well, what do we know about those two vectors? The direction of those two vectors. Can we say anything about that? Well, the direction is not fixed. Right. So if we drop our plot again, I said the first direction is tangent to that curve. Take the second derivative, what do we get? Vector, depending on the radius, let's see, in that case, it's going to be, drew that in the wrong place, in that direction. Right. So it is, the derivative of that unit vector with respect to that curve is perpendicular to it, or orthogonal to it, more specifically. All right. So let's use this to define another coordinate for these, or another unit vector in this kind of intrinsic coordinates. Okay. I'm going to call this En. And we're going to define some rho, and we'll talk about that in just a second. That, where row is defined by that. Okay, so this is our kind of tangential vector. That's normal. En, the n's for normal. What does this tell us? What is that physically? That row parameter there. Well, first, why do we need it? Let's start with there. Is that? Yeah, so you guys are kind of in the same direction, right? So we don't need a positive one, we just need it to be a unit vector. Right? So this derivative is not necessarily, well, yeah, it's definitely not necessarily positive, but the unit vector can be negative. Right? So the direction can be negative, but we just need the magnitude to be scaled to 1. That's what that does for us. Right? So you take the unit vector, you take the derivative of that vector, scale by its magnitude, you get a normalized vector. Okay. So this tangential point's tangent to the path. This normal vector points always towards the center. Or towards the origin. So in that, kind of thinking in those terms, we have it normalized, and then what does this rho represent physically now? Let's answer that question that we started there. Something about the path. Well, Rho uses it a lot for that, a lot of things, but you've probably seen it used this way.
Radius of curvature.
Yeah, that's right. So this is actually the radius curvature of that path. In this case, the kind of instantaneous radius of curvature. Okay. So in this case, we can have everything we need to describe our acceleration of that point P in terms of our these two unit vectors. No, that's not quite right. It's 1 over rho. This is d squared r. Right, you got the rho that's there. We need to just try about to make the work, make the math work. Okay, so does this make sense physically? See some nodding heads. Everyone agreeing that it makes sense physically? Well, let's think about it, right? So what's my acceleration at this point? Think about the simple case of just a circle. This path could be a circle around the origin. Right? You probably could reason about that easier than you could a random path. Right? So my acceleration, if I have acceleration along the path, I'm getting faster in the direction of my path. Where's that acceleration happen? What direction is that acceleration happening? Yeah, tangent to the path. So if I... This S double dot is acceleration along the path, right? So if I'm accelerating along my path, that acceleration is in the direction of the path. Right? Even if I have a fixed velocity, I have some acceleration back towards the center. If I don't, I'm not turning. Right? And we can see that by looking at this. So we can write... F equals ma. Now we don't have to write this in Cartesian coordinates. In fact, most often we're not going to be writing that in Cartesian coordinates. Right? We can write that, we can use these coordinates. Okay. So we can write sum of forces in the tangential direction is that. Sum of forces in the radial direction is that. Well, we need one more direction. What do we like, kind of properties do we like our coordinate frames to have?
Right-hand rule.
So we're going to define another vector. In this case, it's T cross N, yeah. And it's orthogonal to both of those vectors. Get there by just taking that cross product. That guy we call binormal vector, binormal direction. Okay, and you see, he doesn't show up here on the right-hand side in the acceleration equation. Right. So, what does it tell us about the sum of the forces in that direction? Yeah, it has to be zero. Okay. So, we can write Newton's equations in whatever coordinates frame we want. And a key point, which we'll stress later on today as well, is we can choose that frame. And as long as everything is consistent, it should all work out for us. Okay. And we talked on Tuesday about some choices in solving dynamics problems that can go from 10 pages to 10 lines. This is one of those. Picking the right coordinate frame to describe your system. We're going to continuously talk about picking the right frames that are kind of naturally describe your system. So if you try to shoehorn everything into a Cartesian system, you're going to create a lot of extra work for yourself. It will all work out in the end, but it may take you forever to get to that solution. Whereas if you're thinking a little bit about what you want your frames to be, you can get there a lot quickly. And not just speed-wise, but you're going to be less prone to errors as well. If you have 10 lines as compared to 10 pages. The forces here that would keep us on that path, basically, right? So we might have some force accelerating along this path, and there's some force that's keeping us on that path. So these forces for this kind of problem are typically going to arise as constraint forces, actually. So you can imagine a Thomas boat traveling along this path. Right? I'm going to have some thrust in the direction of my path, always tangential to my path, so that's going to be here, right? And there's going to be something else that's going to keep me on that path, right? Or a roller coaster, a train. Right? The constraint forces from the rail keep me accelerating around accelerating towards the center of the curve, or in the plane of that path. All right. Questions about path variables. We'll work some problems a bit later. Some of your initial homework problems are dealing with these guys, describing systems in these terms. Nothing? All right, we'll continue. So I can get rid of that. Next one is pretty easy. We'll keep that. Keep that. That. Two dots, two rectangular Cartesian coordinates. These are those that you're probably most familiar with. So we have, we're going to write the position of point P with respect to O in rectangular Cartesian coordinates. How do we do that? Anybody?
IJK.
Yeah, you're going to use IJK. Well, what do you have in each of those directions?
A vector.
Describing what?
The distance traveled along those axes.
So we will typically write it. Like that, where those guys are implied functions of time, so we could be explicit about that if we wanted. Okay. If we're using that convention, what's the velocity of point P? Well, it's just the total time derivative of that guy. Just like before. What's changing? What's each of these terms, right? We will have dx dt. Let's do the first one because we'll talk about it, okay? Is that unit vector changing with respect to time? Either in direction or magnitude. This I vector, if we're saying this is a fixed inertial frame. this guy? Is that non-zero? No, not in this case. So the same would be true for dj, dt. Right, the direction of that unit vector is not changing at all. Right, so that's a nice property of Cartesian coordinates and why it's heavily used in undergrad dynamics and why it makes the most sense to most people of these frames is that those vectors are not changing direction. Okay, so our velocity, x is changing with time, but x is always in the component's always in the I direction. Okay. We follow a similar pattern for acceleration. Those vectors are still not changing, even if we take kind of that second derivative. Okay. And of course, you can write Newton's second law with this guy. Oops, I double jot J. Sorry, I got a little cramp there. Okay. And of course, this gives me three equations just like it did for those path variables. Where I can look at the forces in the J direction. Just deal with that y acceleration, forces in the k direction, just deal with the acceleration in that direction. So this looks nice and neat, and it looks like, well, hey, if I only care about the x direction, I only have to solve that. And that can be true, but these forces are not necessarily decoupled like the equations are. Okay, so the forces driving this rectilinear motion are not necessarily decoupled, even if the accelerations are. Which we'll see a lot of. So hopefully that one looks familiar. Questions about that? Hopefully review mostly. That's talk about curvilinear coordinates. Okay. Curvilinear coordinates, the most famous two of which are cylindrical and spherical, and those are the two that we will use most often. But you can also have non-additional parameters that fit curvilinear coordinate definitions that are not spherical or cylindrical. So you get to really complicate, you know, we have a follow-up to this class eventually, you get to talk about those. But we're going to stay cylindrical or spherical. Okay. And I'll actually go back over to my same figure maybe, so we don't have to redraw that. And for cylindrical coordinates, how are we going to describe this point? We're going to have, let me draw some dashed lines in black maybe that are going to help us. Okay, so that point's somewhere out of the board, right? Something like that. So we're going to have the distance from the origin in this plane, we're going to call R. Okay. We're going to have some distance above the xy plane. All right, you'll see that as z. And they're going to have some rotational parameter. And we're going to have three unit vectors that describe those three directions. So we have R. It's the radial direction. All right. And related to that, E theta. And we have, as z getting bigger, the positive z direction, z. Everybody following the figure, mostly? So theta rotation is measured usually from the x-axis in this direction. So a direction of increasing theta at any instant is where e theta is. Okay, so if we want to write the position of point P in these coordinates, this set of coordinates, with respect to the origin, what do we have? What is it? Close to that. What does everybody else think? Okay. I'm going to say we can do it like this. Theta doesn't actually show up there. Why is that? Theta is embedded in there somewhere. Where is it? Where is it embedded, if you will? R is just a scalar, but you're close. Yeah, the unit vector. We need theta. Theta gives us the direction of that unit vector. Spinning around. So theta shows up there, but it just contributes to what direction that ER is pointing in, that radial unit vector. Okay? Let's make a note for you. And that ER is theta dependent. That's where we don't have that as explicit theta in this position equation. Well, if I'm going to write the velocity of this guy, I need to take the total time derivative, as always. Let's write out that full expression. Okay, so that's the full thing. We're not making any assumptions about things going to zero or anything yet. What here does go to zero? Anything? What here is not changing, in other words, or if you're looking at the derivative. So one of the unit vectors doesn't change, right? Ez is always up, no matter where you're at in this coordinate frame. So that guy goes to zero. Right, the direction of Vz is always pointing upwards here. Is the radial unit vector fixed? Is it not? Is it unchanging with respect to time? If I'm here, if I rotate by some theta, I'm over there sometime later. Is theta, is ER always pointing from the z-axis out to the point? Is it changing with respect to time? Yeah, so this guy, we can't ignore that in this case. He's not fixed with respect to time. So we need to really figure out what that is with respect and be able to write it in terms of our unit vectors. Okay. How the heck do we do that? Okay. So our question kind of at hand right now. We need to figure out what that is. And we want to write it. Anomaly is something in terms of those three unit vectors. So we need to figure out for this, what are those three guys? Okay. I think we can get one of them pretty easily. Right. As ER is changing with respect to time, is it changing in the z-axis at all ever? No. So that we know that's going to be a zero. As ER is changing with respect to time, is it ever changing in the ER direction? No, not changing in that direction either. So we have something that's going to change in that E theta direction. Right. We can write this. Let's write this a little bit different way. DR T. And what we can do, we know it's a function of that theta. So we can rewrite it that way if we want. Okay. So that just gives us, hey, it's theta dot and then the change of that unit vector as functions of really small changes in theta. Everybody take them with the derivative of that unit vector with respect to the really small changes in theta. Okay. So if we look back at that, if we take ER, let's take a little top-down view of it. Say ER starts in that direction, and we have E theta there. Okay. And we take a just an instant later, really tiny, infinitesimally small change in theta later. Length of that guy doesn't change at all. So I rotate by theta. Theta just happens to be really, really small. So this is kind of ER blue. Maybe ER prime. Theta prime, maybe. So if I look, if I want to evaluate how does ER change for changes in theta. Right? And just length is not changing, so I don't have to worry about that. So I really only need to think about what direction is changing. What's the direction change? If you look at this figure, what direction is that change in? Right? You can just look at the tip of those two vectors. What direction is that change in? E theta. E theta. All right, so now if we plug that into our velocity equation, we can think about if it makes sense physically. Okay. So does that make sense physically? Okay, if R is changing, we're going to have some velocity in the radial direction. If R is changing, we have velocity in radial direction. Well, that makes sense. Right. Theta is changing. Right. Think about it this way. Theta dot's not zero. Right. We have some velocity. Theta dot's not zero. We're tangential to that path now. We know the velocity is in that E theta direction. That makes sense. Right? And the farther we get out for the same theta dot, the faster we're going to be going in that tangential direction. Makes sense physically too. And if Z is changing, we have velocity in that Z direction. It all makes sense physically. It's better. Okay. I have to go through the same thing for the acceleration here. I'll write out the full thing. Okay, there's our full derivative, total time derivative. Our velocity is our acceleration. And I'm writing these out for now. We won't do this probably beyond today. But always remember, if you're trying to do this calculation, you got to take the total time derivative. And remember that these vector directions are not always going to be fixed. So what of this? That's dot up there. What if this we know goes to zero right away? For same reasons we did the first time.
What you just
dotted. What I just dotted, that's right. Because that guy's not changing at all. He's always in the same direction.
Should there also be a dot on the second term, dr?
Yes. About that. Okay, well, we figured out what that guy is before. Plug that in. Okay. Everything else is making sense. Well, how does this guy change? We can pull the same trick, maybe, as before. If you look at it there's some, say it's rolling in just the theta motion. Well, what direction is the change here? We have a small rotation in theta. Yeah, actually, in this case, minus ER, right? Because ER is pointing that way. Okay. And we can't say necessarily that guy, in this case for theta, that R is fixed, like we did the first time. So we actually have an R dot term there, too. So if we take that and plug it in here, we can simplify this equation a little bit and get what you might have seen even in high school physics for these. If you ignore the z, we're in polar coordinates, right? We're in plane. So you've probably seen some of this before. I like terms be a little bit neater. Make sure I just match the order of everything. Plus minus, yes. Okay, yeah, so this probably looks familiar, hopefully. Seen it somewhere along the line. And then we just have that third dimension now. Okay, so if I took this guy and I did this same trick here, what do we notice about the acceleration? What would happen to the acceleration terms? So I have, m times this in the ER direction, m times that in the E theta direction, m times that in the EZ direction, equals to the sum of forces in each of those directions. Well, what's going on with these terms? If we think about kind of the main change in the ER direction is R, so R dot is directly in ER, right? The main change in theta direction is theta, main change in Z is Z. Well, those dot terms for here show up in other places, too. Right, so we don't get this nice decoupling of the accelerations like we do in Cartesian case. Right, even though in this case we're probably going to have coupling in the forces, in that case we have coupling of the accelerations. So we have kind of a nonlinear, highly coupled set of equations in this coordinate frame. So that is cylindrical. Leave that figure up. What are our other most common curvilinear set of coordinates? 2.3.2, it must be. Yep. Okay. So I'm going to clean this up a little bit so we can write the cylindrical ones on it. Although that's probably useful. Okay. We're going to have for spherical, this is still out here somewhere. Okay. Vector there. Well, we're going to be able to write the position of that guy as. So we're going to say that we have that r distance measured from the origin in the, along that line, er direction. So er is a line from the origin to the point we're trying to place in spherical coordinates. So this er is kind of coming out of the board this way, really. Point here, origin there, er is that vector collecting into. Do we need anything else to locate that point in this coordinate frame, its position? No. Right. That completely describes its location. Because we have this direction, of course, is dependent upon these angles and things, but all that's embedded in that unit vector, that direction. Okay. We will have, however, two angles that we'll need to describe velocities and accelerations. Okay. ER is that way. Phi is in the direction of increasing phi. Okay. And E theta is in the direction of increasing theta. So that we have a right-hand coordinate system. V cross theta equals R. Okay. You of course can do velocity there. That is the direction of ER fixed. No. Right. So this guy is not zero, and R dot in general can be non-zero as well. Right. So if R is changing, we have acceleration out here, or velocity in that ER direction, and then the ER itself can be changing if theta or phi are changing. The book goes through the full derivation, kind of like we did here in Charles's diagrams, of how to get from that to the simplified form. I don't think it's really worth us doing in class just to do a bunch of algebra and calculus and whatever. So I'll just write up the expression for you and let you refer to Dr. Ginsburg's work if you want to see where these terms came from. I'm not going to remember this offhand, but that was... So even though we didn't go through the math, we can still reason about whether this will make sense physically for a particle that has some non-zero velocity in every curve. So we talked about the ER, ER terms. What about this guy? Does that make sense as well? In this phi direction, the velocity component in the phi direction. Depends on, well, if phi is changing. Yeah, that probably makes sense, right? And it's proportional to how far we are from the origin. So that's just that tangential velocity rotating about a fixed point. Makes sense if we have everything else constant, right? We can do the same thing over here. We have everything else constant. We have some displacement term times an angular velocity in that theta direction. It's true. This sine phi comes from because what that gets us is that distance. So that is our sine phi, right? So that's just the distance the point is away from the axis about which we're rotating. So that makes sense physically too. So this makes sense physically as it better. And there's a super long expression for acceleration. I will leave you guys to grab. I don't think we need to spend 5 minutes writing that up. All right. So those are our kind of four types of coordinate frames we're going to work with throughout the entire semester. We have these intrinsic coordinates, these path variables, Cartesian, cylindrical, spherical. Okay. And as we're talking, what we said is that, hey, for a given system, we want to choose the type of coordinate frame that most naturally describes its motion. Well, what's going to happen for us very quickly is that for most systems, none of these things is really an exact fit. Right? There could be some component that's really nicely described by spherical coordinates and some other component that you want to describe in cylindrical coordinates. So we need to be able to map from one type of coordinate frame, one set of coordinate frames to another. Do that in an efficient way without having to memorize the formulas like you probably did in high school. So let's look at a first example of how to do that. So when we talk about this, what we are talking about descriptions 2.4 must be, yes. Mixed kinematical description for using multiple frames to describe the kinematics of some system. So an example, I guess I could have left my particle up there. Now we're seeing a fixed frame, origin O. We're going to have some point out here somewhere. P for point. Okay. And then let's say there's some kind of curvilinear path that has a start and then some kind of end maybe over there. Okay. So think something like a wobbly circle around the z-axis maybe. We can project from our point down onto a plane to help us picture it. Sorry. Where is that? Somewhere there. Okay. Well, let's think about, well, let's call that guy theta. And the distance in this direction R, could very well be, should be the same up there. Okay. And there's some height, z. Okay. But we are saying that, hey, we know this path. So we have kind of drawn up maybe two different ways to describe this particle moving along this kind of wobbly circle of a path. So what kind of frame should we use to describe it? What do you think is most applicable here?
Cylindrical.
Cylindrical, maybe. What's the other option, maybe, since we know the path? Right in the name.
Rectangular.
Not quite.
Curvilinear, sorry.
Nope. Since we know the path, what kind of variables should we use to describe it? Path variables, intrinsic coordinates, right? If we know this path, we can write its position as a function of distance along that path.
Forgot right? about that
R. Yeah? Yeah? But what's true? So if we have those two different descriptions of the position of this particle along that path, what's true about its velocity? Is the velocity different? The particle's actually physical velocity. Is it different depending on what coordinate frame we use to describe it?
No.
No. Right. So we wrote its velocity in path variables or extrinsic coordinates. If we wrote its velocity in cylindrical or spherical or Cartesian, whatever we want to use, those two things have to be equal, or those things are equal. Okay. So that's one way we can make this transformation between coordinate frames. Okay. So let's look at that. Okay. And we'll look at actually a simplified case of this. For example, let's look just kind of a planar case. Match the... We're going to have some unit vectors in these various directions, alpha, gamma, beta, and mu. So we have two different frames. We have alpha and beta is kind of a right-hand frame, and those two guys are right-hand. Okay. And we say we're rotating by here. Let's say. Well, if I want to write the trick here is to be able to write either of those unit vectors in terms of the other ones, the frame you're trying to describe it in. I need to figure out what goes in those blanks for that guy. What goes in the blanks for that guy? Okay. So what goes in the blanks? This one's pretty easy to reason about just from geometry. When we think about this, is what component of this gamma, e gamma unit vector is in the direction of the alpha? Yeah, there you go. Okay. And what component of that e gamma is in e beta? Somebody. You got a cosine here, what do you expect to see over there? Yes. All right. And you can do this too. Trust you guys can figure that out. Okay. So we have we've mapped out the relationship between these two frames. Right, we've just done it kind of in this planar case, kind of geometrically right now. We'll generalize this to three dimensions. This gets really messy if you're trying to do it in three dimensions. We'll generalize this in chapter 3, which will most likely start on Tuesday. Okay. So if we write the velocity of some point, some arbitrary point, we can write it say as some component in the alpha direction, which we'll call V alpha. Some component in the beta direction, we'll call V beta. Right. Well, we know that it has to equal. Has to equal. The velocity of the particle is the velocity of the particle. Right. Has to equal. Velocity using the other frame. Okay. So if we're, for example, are given the velocity in that gamma mu frame, this what's the velocity in the alpha beta frame? So how do you think we do that? Yeah, you just plug these guys in here and there, collect terms, and solve for those things. We can write that out to make it obvious. Yeah, if we're going to solve this equation, what do we need to do? All right, so we know these guys. I'll underline that. We know that and that. We don't know alpha and beta. So how do we get to that? How do we solve for V alpha, V beta? Yeah, you collect the terms in each direction and then equate them. So so I know that this guy has to be V alpha. That guy has to be V beta. And the point we're making here is the velocity is the velocity is the velocity. Right, how you're describing it. Acceleration is the acceleration is the acceleration. It doesn't matter how you're describing it. Equations of motion are the equation of motion or the equations of motion. Those are properties of the body or particle itself. So while the equations may look much simpler depending on what frame you solve for or use to solve, while equations may be much simpler to solve for depending on what frame you choose, they still contain all the same information. So if you need a solution in a certain frame but think some other frame is easier to solve for, solve in that frame and then transfer it at the end. Don't do it the hard way. Okay. That's a pretty common thing to do, actually. Let's see, we got 15 minutes. Let's work an example. We'll formalize that out to three dimensions starting on Tuesday. Which I think is actually the easier way to do it. Example 2.11 from your book. Okay. We have just a planar case here, nice and easy. Well, we can call this XY, I suppose. All right. We have up here. See if I can do this. Little kid airplane. It's flying that way, or bird maybe, however you want to think about it. No problem, it's an airplane. Okay. We have, make it red, I suppose, has some velocity that's constant in that direction. There's some initial height, let's say, over here. There's some angle beta. Okay. I'm going to call this H, this initial height. When we started observing this airplane. Okay. To match the problem, we'll call the origin of this guy A. Okay, sorry. Okay. So we know from the problem velocity of our airplane is constant, that V, and its direction it's heading. That angle beta is constant. Okay. What we want, makes sense, I suppose. Call R the distance from the origin, and the angle of that guy is theta. Okay. Given that the velocity in the direction the plane is flying is V and beta is constant, what's R dot and theta dot? How do we solve this?
Can you just write the vector equation and
Yeah, that's what we're gonna do. We're gonna write some vector equations and then just like we did for the simple case, match up terms basically. Okay. Well, our first step for a good number of the problems that we're going to work on is to pick out what kind of frames we can use to describe the system. Okay. Well, this plane, he's traveling at a constant velocity at a constant angle. What do we know about his path? Do we know the path?
Straight line.
It's kind of a straight line, but we know the path. I guess is the point I'm trying to make. Right. So what direction is the velocity in? So if we're thinking about paths, it's that direction. What do we call that direction?
E
something. The velocity is always what to the path?
Tangent
to the path. Tangent. All right. And then we have a normal vector. So we have some path coordinates now, path variables describing intrinsic coordinates, describing the path this plane is on. And what we want is some description in r and theta. Well, what does that sound like? The coordinate frames we discussed.
Cylindrical.
Yeah, 30 minutes ago. R, and as theta increases, that's that way. Theta.
Is that
En? En, yeah, normal. Okay. So we're thinking about this problem in terms of path variables. The velocity of the plane is what? In terms of those path variables.
VET,
pretty simple. Oops. Subscript. Where V without the bar is the constant speed. Right. Okay, if we're thinking about the velocity in terms of those cylindrical coordinates, what is the velocity of this plane?
R-E,
it's R-E something to start out with. Okay. That's going to describe our position of it. What about the velocity? I wrote this equation a little while ago. It's a generic polar velocity. We're in a plane. Okay, so what do I need to do now? I have the velocity of this plane written in both my frames. I know the velocity here. I want to write the velocity in this frame so that I can figure out what r and theta dot are. What do I need to figure out next?
How er and e theta relate to et.
That's right. So, I need to figure that out. All right, so I'm going to define another. Think about this rotation, right? So basically what I'm trying to figure out is that angle, right? Well, where does that come from in terms of the angles we have? Well, it's the same as this guy, right? They can intersect there. That's the same angle. Okay. So what is that angle then? 180 minus beta.
No.
Theta minus beta. Yeah, there you go. Okay. So we have here and then over here. So from there, we just match up terms. So we know R and V don't need the ER, because that's just the ER term. Take those two equations, two unknowns, solve for r dot and theta dot. And that work is in the notes, but I've got 2 minutes left. I don't think we need to do it. Just algebra from here. Okay. You can check out example 2.7 is another way to work this problem. Talked about on Tuesday, kind of taking the same problem and trying to work it a bunch of different ways to develop some intuition. It's good practice. Okay. Any questions? You now have all the skills you need to do homework 1.